The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Pat Perry for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Money Matters. Today's episode of Money Matters is underwritten by the Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving the community since 1974. They can be reached at 919-781-1973. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from the News and Observer. Today's stories include what happens to the economy when $5.2 trillion in stimulus wears off, and group and companies lobby for North Carolina medical marijuana. The U.S. government spent at least $5.2 trillion to combat the COVID-19 crisis. It stands as one of the most expensive, ambitious experiments in U.S. history, and it succeeded. A final phase of that assistance could begin this week when the Treasury Department begins a $110 billion program of child tax credit payments for millions of Americans. Those benefits are set to run through the end of the year. But even that program runs out, assuming it is not renewed, and policymakers will be undertaking an equally uncertain experiment by letting most other COVID-19 relief aid run its course. Businesses and households that were able to navigate the pandemic with large levels of government aid will soon test their ability to forge ahead on their own. Previous attempts to let pandemic-related benefits expire were met with last-minute extensions as economic updates remained dismal and hardship remained high. But the White House appears ready to let the training wheels come off this year as positive indicators pile up. GDP numbers released later this month will likely show the economy has already recovered from its pandemic losses. The nonpartisan Congressional Budget Office expects it to grow at a searing 7.4% pace in 2021 and a still respectable 3.1% in 2022, adjusted for inflation, which would be the strongest two-year growth spurt the U.S. has put together in 37 years. But the post-pandemic boom will fade. CBO now projects growth will slow to 1.1% in 2023 and an average of 1.2% in 2024 and 2025. The slowest growth the U.S. has ever seen outside of a recession, according to the Commerce Department data going back to 1929. Well, how much did we spend, really? The $5.2 trillion total is the estimated impact on the federal deficit of about $5.9 trillion in relief authorized by Congress, as calculated by the Committee for a Responsible Federal Budget, a nonpartisan think tank. These figures don't include about $0.7 trillion authorized by President Joe Biden and former President Donald Trump in the form of actions like disaster assistance and tax relief, moves which have limited impact on future deficits, about $0.1 trillion. They also don't include the $3.3 trillion and counting the Federal Reserve spent to stabilize the economy, largely through buying assets to inject cash into markets. Such purchases have almost doubled the size of the Fed's immense balance sheet, but don't add to the deficit. Well, how big is it? Well, it's hard to put $5.2 trillion in perspective. During the pandemic from February 2020 to May 2021, 7.6 million existing homes and condos were sold in the U.S. according to National Association of Realtors data. With $5.2 trillion, the U.S. government could have bought every single one of them twice. and the feds would still have had a bit left over to upgrade the furniture in the den. Was it enough? Well, it's clearly larger than was needed to restore the economy back to its previous trajectory, said CRFB Senior Vice President Mark Goldwyn, referring to the strong growth rates registered in 2018 and 2019 before the novel coronavirus outbreak. By comparing estimates of where the economy would have been without congressional intervention to estimates of where it would have been had the crisis not occurred through 2023, it could be said the economy left a $4.5 trillion hole in GDP. In that case, $5.2 trillion from Congress plus trillions more from the Federal Reserve might look like overkill. But it should be remembered that it took three major stimulus packages and a year of patches and revisions to reach the point where overkill was even a possibility. Next, world's billionaire factory shutters as China cracks down. It was the kind of brazen PR stunt that Jack Ma might have dreamed up. But this wasn't the flamboyant Chinese billionaire who disappeared from public view 8 months ago. It was Mark Zuckerberg bobbing up and down on a hydrofoil surfboard, clutching an American flag, and exuding all the confidence of a man worth $130 billion. The contrast between the social media mogul's July 4th Instagram video and the day's big event in China could hardly have been starker. Regulators in Beijing had just hours earlier banned Didi Global Incorporated's ride-hailing service from app stores, delivering their latest hammer blow to an entrepreneurial elite that once seemed destined to challenge Zuckerberg and his U.S. peers at the top of the world's wealth rankings. The age of unfettered gains for China's ultra-rich now appears to be coming to an abrupt end. Even as the world's 10 wealthiest people added $209 billion to their net worth in the first half of 2021, China's richest tycoons in the Bloomberg Billionaires Index saw their combined fortunes shrink by $16 billion. Shares of their flagship companies sank by an average 13% during the period, the first time in at least 6 years they've recorded declines when the broader Chinese equity market was rising. Didi stock has plunged 14% since its June 30 debut on the New York Stock Exchange, slashing the wealth of the company's co-founders by almost $800 million. Behind the losses is a crackdown that has only intensified since November, when Ma's Ant Group Corp. was forced to pull its blockbuster initial public offering at the last minute. Policymakers are tightening regulations on some of the most important facets of Asia's largest economy, from financial services to internet platforms and the data that underpins most big businesses in modern China. In the latest salvo, regulators unveiled new draft rules on Saturday that would require nearly all domestic companies to undergo a cybersecurity review before listing in a foreign country. Beijing's motivations for the crackdown are varied. They include concerns about anti-competitive behavior in a tech industry, risk to financial stability from lightly regulated lending platforms, and the rapid proliferation of sensitive personal information in the hands of large corporations. But another undercurrent running through many of the government's latest initiatives is a not-so-secret desire to rein in the power of China's tycoons, some of whom have amassed an enormous amount of influence over the $14 trillion economy. As one government official familiar with the leadership's thinking described it, Beijing wants to prevent its billionaires from becoming a force as strong as the family-run cabal that dominates South Korea's economy and many aspects of its politics. Adding to Beijing's resolve is the Chinese public's growing concern over rising inequality. At a major speech on his economic plans in October, President Xi Jinping acknowledged that the country's development was unbalanced and said common prosperity should be the ultimate goal. The upshot is a new era for the country's billionaires and the investors who back them. Gone are the days when tycoons like Ma could confidently bend the rules to supercharge their company's growth and challenge entrenched interests like state-owned banks. Outsized public personas, long seen as an asset for tech company founders, now look like a liability. The new playbook for China's ultra-rich calls for more deference to the Communist Party, more charitable donations, and more focus on the well-being of rank-and-file employees, even if it hurts the bottom line. Some of the tech companies became larger than life, said Alan Zeman, a property tycoon who gave up his Canadian passport to become a naturalized citizen of China in 2008. One big lesson from the crackdown, don't get bigger than the government, Zeman said. Shortly after attending the Communist Party's 100th anniversary celebration in Beijing on July 1st. Didi notwithstanding, the message appears to be getting through. Ma, who criticized Chinese financial regulators in his last public speech before Ant's IPO was abruptly suspended, has since resurfaced only a handful of times in carefully choreographed appearances. Colin Huang, whose e-commerce giant Pinduoduo Incorporated has come under scrutiny for its relentless working schedules and has given up his roles as chairman and CEO and donated shares worth billions of dollars. ByteDance Limited founder Zhang Zeming said in May he would step down as CEO and spend more time on educational charity. The firm is approaching any potential IPO cautiously after meetings with government officials over data security issues earlier this year, people with knowledge of the matter said. Wang Xing, the chairman of food delivery giant Meituan, has mostly steered clear of the public spotlight since he posted a 1,100-year-old poem in May that some regarded as an implicit criticism of the government. Wang, who later issued a clarification, saying the post had been targeted at the short-sightedness of his own industry, was advised by Beijing officials to keep a low profile, according to people with knowledge of the matter. The new environment will fundamentally change China's tech sector, partly because investors will become more wary of funding entrepreneurs who could end up on a collision course with Beijing, said Eric Schiffer, CEO of Patriarch Organization, a Los Angeles-based private equity firm. President Joe Biden has also taken aim at the billionaire class, calling for increased taxes on the rich and signing an executive order on Friday that aims to weaken dominance of America's biggest companies. The move echoed an ongoing antitrust campaign in China that has ensnared giants including Alibaba Group Holding and arch-rival Tencent Holdings. One key difference is that Chinese authorities, unrestrained by Western-style checks and balances, can act more forcefully than their U.S. counterparts, said Angela Zhang, director of the Center for Chinese Law at the University of Hong Kong and author of Chinese Antitrust Exceptionalism. Zuckerberg's hydrofoil joyride came just a few days after a judge dismissed two monopoly lawsuits against Facebook, Inc. that had been filed by the U.S. government and a coalition of states. In the case of China, the pendulum swings very quickly, Zhang said. Beijing has a variety of tools for reining in billionaires, including detention in the most extreme cases, an internal disciplinary process for party members known as Shugenghua has been used for some tycoons in the past, investigations by antitrust, cybersecurity, and other regulators are more common ways to influence the behavior of tech giants. The government also uses soft methods, including state media campaigns, Zhang said. In the days after regulators halted Ant's IPO, Zif visited a museum in the eastern city of Nantong that was created by Zhang Jing, a 19th century capitalist. The Chinese president described Zhang as a patriotic nation builder and philanthropist. Rather than disrupt the financial system with unregulated loans, he built factories and hundreds of schools. When you see a virtuous person follow his example, Xi was quoted as saying by Chinese media, calling on private entrepreneurs to strengthen their feelings for the country and assume social responsibilities. While China's crackdown has been most visible in the tech industry, the country's property billionaires have also come under increased pressure in recent years. Authorities have steadily restricted the industry's access to funding in an attempt to rein in home prices and reduce systemic risk to the financial system. China Evergrande Group Chairman Huo Kanyan has been among the biggest casualties of the campaign this year, losing $6.7 billion, or nearly 30% of his fortune as Evergrande stock tumbled on concerns the company faces a liquidity crunch. A more subtle sign of billionaires' waning influence can be seen in their shrinking share of political appointments. Data from the Huron Report, which produces wealth rankings, show that rich entrepreneurs accounted for 5.8% of the delegates in the Chinese People's Political Consultative Conference and the National People's Congress, the lowest in at least 8 years and down from 15.3% in 2013. There is an evolution in the thinking of which type of people should be within the mix, said Rupert Hugworth, the Huron Report's chairman. It's becoming much harder for entrepreneurs. The big question is whether all of this will be good for China in the long run. One risk is that the onslaught of regulatory probes and rule changes undermines investor confidence. HKU's Zhang said that could make it less likely that the entrepreneurs behind the next potential Alibaba or Tencent get the funding they need to make their ideas a reality. Global venture capital firms will likely think twice about investing in Chinese companies if Beijing prevents them from listing overseas, a crucial exit route for early international backers. Yet some of Beijing's new policies may foster competition in the oligopolistic tech industry, clearing the way for a new class of billionaires to rise. Stricter regulations on fintech firms will help reduce systemic risk, even if they slow down innovation. China's crackdown on Ant won praise last month from Berkshire Hathaway, Inc. Vice Chairman Charlie Munger, who said in an interview with CNBC that the communists did the right thing by letting Ma know he couldn't wade into banking and do just whatever he pleased. Either way, China's entrepreneurs will have little choice but to embrace the new normal, said Chen Long, a partner at consulting firm Plenum. The good old days of savage growth are gone. Bloomberg's Pei Yi Mok, Adrian Leung, Jane Pong, and Taiping Huang contributed to this report. Next, group companies lobby for NC medical marijuana. The leader of a North Carolina hemp company, who happens to be the son of a former governor, is among the driving forces behind a medical marijuana advocacy campaign at the legislature. The group NC Families for Medical Cannabis has been a big presence at Senate committee hearings on legislation to legalize medical marijuana, bringing together veterans who say marijuana could ease their PTSD symptoms. The group, which formed in 2017 as NC CAN, is releasing more information this week about the businesses and lobbyists working with it to pass Senate Bill 711. The bill's next hearing was scheduled for the Senate Finance Committee on Tuesday, but it's now been postponed until next week. One of the founding members of the group is Garrett Perdue, who's the founder and CEO of the hemp and CBD products company Root Bioscience. He's also the son of former Democratic Governor Bev Perdue. He praised SB 711 in a news release. Having worked on a similar legislation throughout the country, it was obvious a tremendous amount of care and attention went into drafting legislation that ensures we avoid mistakes made in other states, he said. Others in the group include the leaders of Curaleaf, which bills itself as the largest cannabis company in the United States, Columbia Care, which operates 92 marijuana dispensaries and 30 manufacturing facilities, Trulieve, a Florida-based medical marijuana company, PharmaCann, which has dispensaries and marijuana cultivation operations in six states, Louisiana-based medical marijuana firm Alera Holistic Healthcare, and Cresco Labs, which has production facilities and dispensaries in 10 states. NC Families for Medical Cannabis hired two veteran lobbyists in May to assist in their efforts, Theresa Kostrowa and Lisa Martin. But they're not the only lobbyists involved with the issue. According to lobbying registration records, former NC Representative Ed Haynes, Democrat from Forsyth, is leading a group called the NC Medical Cannabis Association. That group lists a headquarters at the Winston-Salem Law Office of Kilpatrick Townsend. Two lobbyists from that firm, Chess McDowell and Nelson Freeman, are also registered to lobby for the group. McDowell has served in the past as a staffer for Senate Leader Phil Berger, while Freeman is a former advisor to House Speaker Tim Moore. Haynes did not respond to an inquiry about the group last week. Trulieve, the Florida medical marijuana company that's involved in Families for Medical Cannabis, also separately hired its own lobbyist in May, Daniel Baum and Bill Scoggin of the firm Navigator. All of those lobbying registrations occurred after Senate Rules Chairman Bill Rabin filed SB 711 in April. For more North Carolina government and political news, listen to the Under the Dome Politics podcast from the News and Observer and the NC Insider. Next, Big Tobacco flirts with non-smokable cannabis. British American Tobacco's recent investment in Trait Biosciences, Inc. offers intriguing clues about how Big Tobacco may capitalize on the growing cannabis market. While tobacco companies are no stranger to marijuana, the expectation has been that they would gravitate toward things like vape or smokable flower with THC. After all, inhalable products are their expertise. But Trait's strongest patents are for a technology that makes CBD water soluble. that suggests BAT, the London-based maker of Vuse vaping products and Newport cigarettes, could move into other formats for cannabis consumption and even end up competing against beer companies. BAT's corporate venture unit led the $25 million investment in Canada's Trait Biosciences last month. The deal calls for BAT to help commercialize the technology, which could be used in beverages to make the timing of the marijuana compound's effects more predictable. Neither BAT nor Trait would comment on whether the tobacco company has any specific plans to get into non-smokable CBD products or the beverage space in particular. But David O'Reilly, BAT's head of scientific research, hinted at the possibility of new formats. While the company is expanding its business in heated tobacco products and vaping, he said if consumers' needs are better met with different products, we'll develop other platforms, which could be anything. A foray into beverages could put BAT in competition with large consumer products companies such as Molson Coors Beverage Company, which is developing cannabis drinks through a partnership with Hexo, and Corona beer maker Constellation Brands, which is developing cannabis drinks with Canopy Growth Corp. Other formats for cannabis, like CBD cigarettes or chewable products, would pit the company against smaller firms run by former executives from the tobacco space. TAT International, which makes hemp cigarettes, is overseen by C.D. Coscarella, formerly a strategist for Philip Morris International's reduced risk products, Canadips, which makes oral pouch products similar to those in the tobacco space, has former Altria Group Incorporated's executive Peter Dotelevi as chief executive officer. It's still unclear what BAT or Big Tobacco in general really plans to do with CBD, cannabis non-psychoactive ingredient, or other weed-based products. That's partly because marijuana is still not legal in many countries and regulation has yet to take shape in others. Next, retail workers drained from the pandemic and empowered by a strengthening job market are leaving jobs like never before. Some are finding less stressful positions at insurance agencies, marijuana dispensaries, banks, and local governments, where their customer service skills are rewarded with higher wages and better benefits. Others are going back to school to learn new trades or waiting until they are able to secure reliable child care. As Americans ditch their jobs at record rates, retail is leading the way with the largest increase in resignations of any sector. Some 649,000 retail workers put in their notice in April, the industry's largest one-month exodus since the Labor Department began tracking such data more than 20 years ago. We have run out of time for today's episode of Money Matters. I hope you've enjoyed it and be sure to listen next time. I'm Pat Perry, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. Today's episode of Money Matters is underwritten by the Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving the community since 1974. They can be reached at 919-781-1973. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Money Matters is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-